today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, the president weighs in on the side of air travelers against the airlines, and for the first time, you can get a cheap air ticket to Cuba.
2 weeks ago, Rancho Cordova celebrated the Lincoln Highway, and at 3:20, we introduce you to the Los Angeles Route 66 Festival.
Ever wonder what the flight attendants think of your behavior on the plane? At 3:35, we reveal the list of things flight attendants don't like about you, the people who fly with them.
In Europe, river cruises are all the rage, and Clayton Whitehead joins us at 3:50 to talk about his recent experience and to make you a smarter cruise traveler.
It's Sunday afternoon, little past 3 o'clock. Thank you for joining us on The Travel Guys.
On the road again, just can't wait to get on the road again. I'm a traveling man, king of the road, riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out on the Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome. You're tuned to The Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for taking an hour out of your day for hopefully an opportunity for us to make you a smarter traveler. Don't forget now, you can follow along with the program simply by going to travelguysradio.com. We'll have links to just about everything we talk about on our program week in and week out. I'm in studio here in beautiful Sacramento, a little bit of a cloudy but yet beautiful Sunday afternoon. Mark Hoffman a little ways away in one of his favorite hangouts in Tucson, Arizona. Mark, ahoy there.
Ahoy there, Mr. Romano, from beautiful Tucson, Arizona, where it is still 90 degrees plus every day down here in the land of the desert. Sunshine.
Yeah, what brings you to Tucson this time of the year?
Well, unfortunately, I'm down here to attend the memorial service for a friend who passed away. So it's not a pleasure trip necessarily, but it's been a long time since I've been to Tucson. And one thing I can tell you is that the city is a lot bigger. If you haven't been here for a while, this city is spreading out in every direction in the desert. It is now all the way up against the mountains to the east, and has worked its way around the mountains in spots. And there are a lot of upscale suburbs. There are a lot of folks who have chosen to retire in this area.
Well, it's a beautiful part of the country. And, you know, a lot of people have a tendency to want to retire into parts of, parts of the country that are a little on the dry side as we age. The humidity and so forth doesn't necessarily, you know, do our health any good. So I've sort of noticed that the drier states and so forth is a real popular place for people to go.
Yeah, it really is. They love to store airplanes in the desert because it's low humidity, and the airplanes, they don't deteriorate as quickly. So perhaps, I don't know if the same thing can be said for people. Maybe that's a reason to be out here. But
I think that's a pretty good guess there. Well, as we do every week on The Travel Guys, we bring you up to date on what's been going on all week in the travel news. So with that being said, let's bring on Mark with today's travel news. What do you got for us, buddy?
Well, as I mentioned in the headlines, the president is nearing the end of his second term, and as often happens when presidents near the end of their presidential time, they will take care of odd pieces of business. They will commute a few sentences, and they will do some things. Generally, there are a few national parks or preserved areas that will come into existence by executive order or presidential action. And the president last week issued an executive order that called, this is quoting from the press release now, for more competition that helps consumers, workers, and entrepreneurs. What it basically does is it makes some changes, immediate changes, by presidential order to some of the ways that the Department of Transportation can do business with the airlines. For example, there was a temporary authorization for the FAA that was passed in the spring. If you remember, Tom, it said, well, if your baggage doesn't show up in a certain period of time, the airline has to refund you the cost of the baggage. The president have taken that perhaps a little step further by saying, if your bag doesn't arrive on the plane, they owe you your money back, which is what... which has seemed to be logic to me from the very beginning. If you paid them for a service and they didn't perform the service, then you would be entitled at a minimum to a refund of the amount that you paid them for the service. So that is one thing. Now, this is not taking place immediately, so this is going to take a little while, but that's one thing that's going to happen. Also, the way that airlines price online travel agencies in some cases receive larger commissions from some air carriers for selling their tickets. So they will naturally put those airfares first, even to the extent of not displaying some fares in some city pairs with some airlines if it's not their preferred airline. So now what is going to happen is the regulation is going to be that an online travel agency can no longer give preferential treatment to a product that they receive a higher commission for. So they will have to display, if they're going to display flights between Los Angeles and San Francisco, they will have to display all of the airlines and all of the fares between Los Angeles and San Francisco. It's just a little bit more transparency, if you will. It also is going to it's going to change the way that airlines report their on-time rates. And let me explain to you how this is going to work. Right now, United Airlines can kind of report their whole system together. And the mainline flights will prop up the express flights because they will have a better on-time record. Now what's going to happen is that airlines, it used to be if they wanted to, they could split out their different brands. Now they will have to split out their different brands. And they will, and so consumers will be able to see that, hey, these little airplanes are just not performing well at all. Mm-hmm. So maybe I need to drive an hour to a bigger city, to another airport, to make some other travel plans. So basically what they are designed to do is make consumers smarter travelers, which of course is something that we've been trying to do here on this program for a while. Speaking of the president, he also lifted restrictions on Cuban rum and cigars. So if you are going to Cuba, you can bring home all the Cuban rum and cigars that you would like to bring. You a cigar smoker, Mr. Romano?
No, I'm not, but I sure have a lot of friends who are, and they're pretty excited about it. You know, they spend time talking to people that provide cigars, and one of the things that the different cigar manufacturers, or better yet, the retailers are pointing out is that, you know what, we have cigars here that are probably comparable and cheaper to the kind of stuff that you're worried about bringing back over from Cuba. But the bottom line is it's not a Cuban cigar.
Uh-huh. Yes.
You know,
well,
there's the thing.
There's a lot of varieties rolled by a Cuban. So therefore, it's made by a Cuban, but was it Cuban tobacco?
Right.
As a frequent visitor to Key West, we run into this down in Key West on a pretty much a daily basis. There are folks rolling cigars in the street down there, and of course, they could not until now sell you a Cuban cigar. But now, you would have a Cuban rolling cigars made with tobacco from the mainland. And whether or not they told that to the people or not would probably depend on what cruise ship you got off and how smart you looked. But anyway, soon you will be able to bring Cuban rum and Cuban cigars home with you. And speaking of Cuba, how do you like that segue?
There you go.
Speaking of Cuba, it's very interesting, Tom. You know, we took Sports Leisure Vacations, took some groups of people to Cuba. Remember, we talked to Chris Galloway, took them down there.
Yep.
And Chris took groups there, and they paid to fly from Miami to Havana and back. Mm-hmm. They paid $600. Actually, they paid about $480. The $120 was commissioned to whoever set it up. But they paid roughly $480 for round trips from Miami to Cuba and back. You can now buy a ticket on Southwest Airlines today. You can go online and buy a ticket from Fort Lauderdale to Havana, or another Cuban city for certain days of the week for $59 each way.
Wow.
So welcome Cuba to the world of discount airfares. Boy, I'll tell you what, it is amazing what can happen in just a few short months.
All right, if you listened to the Travel Guys last week, you know we told you about a very big event that was coming up in Sacramento for fans of cultural arts. On Tuesday, City Council had a big meeting to make a decision on what was going to happen to Sacramento's Community Center Theater. And as it turned out, to the Memorial Auditorium across the street. Joining us here on the Travel Guys now is Scott Clear, the executive producer and COO for California Musical Theater. Scott, this is all pretty exciting.
Very exciting. All of us at California Musical Theater are really over the moon, and we know all of our arts groups, partners in town feel the same.
You're about to get a brand new facility. It's going to mean you have to move across the street to Memorial Auditorium for a year, but that's going to get an upgrade too.
Exactly. At the end of the day, we will have two completely renovated spaces.
Scott, why don't you systematically take us through this renovation project?
The improvements they intend to make are going to transform that facility. And the renovation work is going to be so extensive. The city staff and their consultants have come up with a very creative way to keep us all performing while they do that work, and that involves doing some major upgrades to Memorial Auditorium so it can serve as our home for the 1920 season of Broadway Sacramento, the ballets Nutcracker, and the like.
And then you'll move back into a brand new theater. And if it looks anything like the artist rendering that we've seen so far, it's just exciting, Scott. It's nice to be living in a city where, you know, we have a real venue. We're almost a real city, by God. And this is all just, it's just all very exciting. For the folks who have gone to the various venues over the years, you know, for those who sat in with the swamp coolers at Music Circus for all of those years, why, this will be another amazing step forward. Thank you for giving us a couple of minutes, and congratulations to all of you over there at California Musical Theater who have really put your heart and soul into this. So it's always nice to win one once in a while.
We really couldn't be more excited.
You know, Tom, in the event that a passenger falls severely ill while a flight is in midair, the flight crew will ask to see if there's a doctor on board who can assist with the emergency. And so that's what Tamika Cross, who was an OBGYN from Houston, said happened on her flight on Delta recently when a passenger a couple rows in front of her became unresponsive. So when she attempted to get the flight attendant's attention, she says she was told, quote, "Oh no, sweetie, put your hand down. We're looking for actual physicians or nurses or some type of medical personnel. We don't have time to talk to you now."
Ooh.
They then overhead they paged, "Any physician on board, please press your flight attendant button." And so she pushed hers again. And so the flight attendant said to her, "Oh wow, you're an actual doctor, huh? Let me see your credentials. What type of doctor are you? What were you doing in Detroit?" And remember now, the passenger is still in need of medical assistance while this flight attendant is grilling a lady who is African American and is a woman. I'm not sure how the flight attendant decided that she couldn't possibly be a doctor, but somehow the Delta flight attendant decided this. Delta, for their part, of course, this has gone rather viral and on Facebook, and Delta, for their part, has responded to comments on their Facebook page saying, "As a global airline that brings hundreds of thousands of people together every day, Delta is deeply committed to treating all of our customers with respect. Delta is investigating this matter, and we will be really working directly with the customer." All you can just say is, whoops, egg on your face on that one, boys and girls. It doesn't really require much more comment. Hey, one of our friends has won an award, the American Society of Travel Agents, also known as ASTA. Gwen Duncan is a member of that group, has named Christopher Elliott the Journalist of the Year. How about that?
Awesome. A link to Chris Elliott's stuff is at travelguysradio.com.
Yeah, Chris won. He was named. It's not something, I guess, that you lobby for, but he's been pretty friendly to the travel industry in terms of helping people with their travel issues. And so it's the first time that the Journalist of the Year award from the American Society of Travel Agents has gone to a consumer advocate. So kind of interesting. Chris Elliott, of course, is an author and consumer advocate and a national syndicated columnist whose work appears in the Washington Post and USA Today, and his column appears on Sundays in the Sacramento Bee, and he's frequently a guest on this program. So congratulations to Chris Elliott on being named Journalist of the Year by the American Society of Travel Agents. All right, that's the travel news, Thomas, for today.
And we are the Travel Guys. Coming up in about 3 minutes, we're going to go to Los Angeles, talk about the Los Angeles Route 66 Festival, Make You a Smarter Traveler. Here again to make you a smarter traveler, it's the Travel and Entertainment Guys, Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. One of our favorite subjects, if you've listened to the show from time to time, you'll hear us talking quite a bit about Route 66. And Mark, you've rounded up a special guest from down in Los Angeles for an event that is coming up in November that I think folks are going to be interested in. It's not your typical Route 66 kind of a story, but very interesting and informative nevertheless. Tell us who we have today.
We've been talking a lot about old highways, Tom, because we just had a Lincoln Highway celebration here in Rancho Cordova a couple of weeks ago. So the Lincoln Highway, of course, crossed the middle of the country. Route 66 went from Chicago to Los Angeles, and we are about to tell you about the 2016 Los Angeles International Route 66 Festival. It is a gathering of a lot of, shall I say, Route 66 scholars. And the Route 66 author and preservationist, Scott Piotrowski, is our guest here on The Travel Guy. Scott, welcome.
Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Tell us about this event that's coming up in Los Angeles just in a couple of weeks. It's the 9th, 10th, and 11th of November. And this isn't a street festival per se. This is more a gathering of perhaps the educators and the educational side of Route 66 and an opportunity for folks to learn about some aspects instead of just walking down the street and buying tchotchkes, but a chance to really learn about the history of the road. Tell us about the conference.
Well, I think you actually opened up the door perfectly for me in the sense that it is a little bit different in Los Angeles. And you mentioned walking down the street as opposed to driving the road. And to me, that's something that really happened in Los Angeles for me. I realized how much there really is to see along 66 in Los Angeles. And I realized that the best way to do it was going to be on foot. So a lot of where I have come from in Los Angeles stems from looking at the road in a different way, looking at the road from your feet, looking at the road from a bicycle, looking at the road from mass transit. And that's what this became for me when we started working on this festival, was how can we get people to look at the road differently than they have in the past? So we are putting on a conference and festival where we're encouraging people to leave their car behind. We're encouraging people to take mass transit, to come downtown to Los Angeles, hear some stories about the highway and where it went and what is out there to see and why it's important, but also some stories about some differences that you don't normally think about when you think about Route 66. So we're going to talk about things like the Negro Green Book from the 1930s through the 1960s, and how black travelers were affected on Route 66. It was a completely different experience for them. We'll talk about women on Route 66 and their experiences, not just traveling, but working the highway. And we're really looking at a completely different perspective of the road where, you know, you're off the road, you're not in your car, you're walking and you're experiencing places like Clifton's Cafeteria and the Broadway Historic Theater District, which is a National Register landmark and was the original western terminus of the highway. So it's just a completely different look that we're taking at the road than what we've had in the past.
We're talking with Scott, the 2016 Los Angeles International Route 66 Festival here with the Travel Guys. Scott, is this the first of the festival of this type?
It is not really the first festival of this type. It's just a different view from the festivals of the past. The idea for an annual Route 66 festival really goes back about 15 to 20 years. They've kind of started in the Texas Panhandle.
If folks would like to be a part of this, of your festival in Los Angeles, how do they become a part of it? You've got a website. We're going to put a link to that on travelguysradio.com. So if you're listening, that's where you can go to find more details. But tell folks there's a cost for registration and some other things. So if there's somebody listening who would like to be a part of the festival or who would like to attend, how do they do that?
So we are starting off our event with a two-day conference, and that does require registration. That's the main educational component for us. But we have some other events happening as well. We've partnered with Yelp, and we're doing a presentation on Thursday evening that'll be open for Yelp users. It is free. It's with noted author Jim Hinckley. So that'll be on Thursday, November 10th. We're doing some bus tours on Saturday and Sunday that weekend. Do a walking tour of downtown L.A. and the original Western Terminus. And we're trying to just partner with some of the communities. We have a community, West Hollywood, has come on board, and they're doing their own event on Sunday, November 13th as well, to honor the road and the extension of the highway out to Santa Monica.
Scott, let me ask you, how did you get interested originally in Route 66?
I moved out to Los Angeles in 1996, and I had always had an interest in history. So I kind of knew of this road called Route 66, but I didn't know anything about it. So when I moved to Los Angeles from Ohio, I followed the road as much as I could back then and just started to explore it and just kind of fell in love with the history of it. And then really it came down to the people, and I'd met a few people that I absolutely loved. They were fantastic people, still are fantastic people in some cases. But they just really got me interested in the stories that were being told on the road. So I've been involved in the preservation and promotion of the highway for 20 years now.
I understand completely, because it was just about 20 years ago that I myself got bit by the Route 66 bug. And you're right. If you get out on the highway on the old road and you start meeting people along the way, then you will forever be entwined with Route 66, because it isn't about a road or cities. It's about the people who are along the road, and it's about how they made a living. And sometimes that involved the highway and sometimes it didn't. And about all of the other sidebars, Candace C. Taylor, who you mentioned is going to be a part of your conference, was a guest on our program a couple months ago talking about that very green book that black travelers use to be able to navigate from city to city across our country on major roads and minor roads and whatever. So, Scott, I wish you the best with the conference. I will be down there myself and hope to get some interviews from some of the folks down there and enjoy some of the lectures and some of your activities. So good luck to you. For those of you who are interested, the conference is in Los Angeles. It starts on November the 9th. You can go to travelguysradio.com, and there will be a link there to all the information you need to get registered or take part in some of the free activities, whatever you wish to do. Thank you, Scott, for joining us today on the Travel Guys.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
We are the Travel Guys. And, of course, over the years, we've run across a few versions of Route 66, haven't we, Mark?
Oh, yeah. There are hundreds of versions of Route 66. There's everything from Perry Como, and you found this one, which is just a little bit different.
But the hook is always the same. We are the Travel Guys on KFBK, traveling the Route 66 today. And that was Depeche Mode, by the way. Look, if you go to travelguysradio.com, a couple things going on there. You can get links to everything we're talking about here on our program every week. You can also leave us a reply or a comment. And one of the things we have there is our podcasts of the Travel Guys radio programs. So all you have to do is let us know that you would like to know when the programs are posted, and we'll send you an email so that you don't have to go and look and it's not there and go back. And so anyway, we'll let you know when they're posted. Simply go to travelguysradio.com. Right there on the homepage, you can fill that out. Coming up after a look at the news here on KFBK, it's all the things flight attendants don't like about passengers. That's next on the Travel Guys. I think I'm going to every Sunday, 3 to 4 o'clock, you can find the Travel Guys right here on KFBK, 93.1 FM and 1530 AM, also at KFBK.com and at iHeartRadio. We're brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm Tom Romano in studio today. Mark Hoffman, a little ways away in Tucson, Arizona. And as we promoted going into the break here, Mark is famous for lists. And today's list is about all the things that flight attendants don't like about passengers. And I would think that this might be a list that's more than three or four things long.
It might be. Do you know what happened while we went to the news break?
What?
My flight home to Sacramento from Los Angeles got delayed 45 minutes tonight. So now I'm not getting in until 11 o'clock instead of 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And you know what? That could get worse. I understand they're actually getting some rain in Southern California today. So,
yeah.
Not a good day to be flying.
Who are you flying with?
southwest from Tucson to over to Los Angeles and then home. It was supposed to be a much quicker trip than the United trip through Denver over here, but sometimes things don't always work out the way you planned them when it comes to airlines. At least I'm with Southwest, and, you know, I have my extra pair of underwear and my toothbrush, so I'll be fine.
All right. You're a smart traveler. You know, it's been really mixed with Southwest. Whenever there is a connecting flight, or whenever I fly out in one of the later flights of the day, I find that they're oftentimes delayed. But otherwise, it hasn't been too bad. So don't take the late flights if you'd kind of like to be semi close to being on time.
Yeah. Thanks for that tip there to make me a smarter traveler. I wish that had come. Actually, we do tell people pretty regularly, you know, don't take the last flight of the night, especially on Friday and Sunday, which is exactly what I'm doing, because guess what? It was $170 cheaper to come home tonight than it was to come home tomorrow morning. Of course, now I'm kind of wishing that maybe I decided to come home tomorrow morning. Anyhow, back to the flight attendants and what they don't like about those of us who ride on the planes. Now, listen, first of all, we need to tell people that, you know, this is just a list that we have gotten off of a press release. And Business and Leisure magazine did this, talked to some flight attendants and got this list of things from them. But undoubtedly, there are lots of flight attendants who have lots of good things to say about the people who fly on their airplanes. But when we're not around, this is what they talk about. And so this is a list. These are supposedly in no particular order, but I find it interesting, don't you, Tom, that right at the top of the list, number one is hogging the overhead bins.
I thought for sure number one would be what I often do. More time, and you would think that in the year 2016, I would be done with this, and that is instead of calling them flight attendants, calling them stewardesses.
Yeah, that would be really, yeah, that will get you probably not spoken to the rest of the flight, I would say. But that isn't on this list. Hogging the overhead bins, particularly I'm thinking about these people who get on with bags they should never have been able to bring on in the first place. And they won't go the long way, so they have to go sideways, effectively keeping someone else from putting their bag up there. Mm-hmm. Or somebody who comes on and has a very heavy bag and needs help getting it lifted. You know, you pack it, you rack it. Not saying go to the crew when boarding. Yesterday when I was leaving Sacramento, we had this very gregarious young lady, and she was just, boy, everybody who got on the plane, she was just, good morning, thank you for flying United, we're happy to see you. And this gentleman got on and she gave him this greeting and he never even looked up. And he happened to be just in front of me getting on the airplane. He didn't say anything to her. He didn't look up or whatever. And he just walked right on down the aisle. And I looked at her and she said, "What am I? Just not even here?" And so anyways, yes, when you don't talk. Yeah, well, they tend to notice those things when you're not, you know, you're not, if they're greeting you, you can at least say hello or good morning back. Giving the flight attendant trash when they're serving meals is one of their pet peeves. So wow. Have you ever been in that position? You know, you've got the trash and they're still serving meals or they're serving drinks or something like that. They're serving and you're trying to get rid of your trash.
Oh, boy.
So. Here's one that I would put on my list, and I think you've mentioned this too, putting your feet on the walls or on other passengers' seats.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, putting your feet up on the wall, particularly if you're on the bulkhead, you know, putting your feet up there high on the bulkhead wall, that pretty much identifies you to everyone on the airplane as a person who has absolutely no class, manners, decorum, or anything else.
Yeah, and then on top of that, those that take their shoes off and do it. In fact, I was watching, what was it? It might have been... I don't know, Jimmy Kimmel, one of the TV shows, and there was their guest was on, and I think it was Jerry Seinfeld, and he holds up his camera, and he had taken a picture of a guy who had taken his shoes off, and the picture was the guy coming out of the restroom on the plane with no shoes on.
Oh, I've seen that before too. That is I think that's on this list later down the row here. Asking what do you have is on the list. You know, there's a menu in the seat pocket there, so you can figure out what they have before they get there. Ignoring the safety announcement drives flight attendants crazy. Of course, for many of us who have heard the safety announcement, you know, 300, 400, 500 times feel like we could probably give the safety announcement to them. But nonetheless,
well, I've been
not talking to other people.
Yes, but you know, it's a matter of just, even if you've heard it and you're bored, show some courtesy and don't have a conversation with somebody while they're doing it. I've been known to actually shush people close to me that are having a conversation while they're giving the safety regulations. I'll go, could you, I'm trying to hear this.
Right. You may not choose to listen to it, but somebody on the plane might like to know how to get off the airplane in an emergency. So yeah, that's okay. Also on the list, not specifying how you take your coffee. So if you order coffee from the flight attendant, you tell them how you want it. Don't wait for the flight attendant to bring you black coffee and then say, oh, you know, besides. Not taking responsibility for your belongings. Going into the lavatory when the plane has already begun its descent, you know, the red light is on, fasten seatbelt, we're going to be landing in 10 minutes, and you get up and go to the restroom. Wearing headphones, this one you see a lot. Wearing headphones when speaking to the flight attendant. For goodness gracious, folks, when the flight attendant is speaking to you, take the headphones out of your ear or off your head, at least one side, so that you can pay attention to what the flight attendant is saying. You think?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Here's some others. Ringing the call bell unnecessarily, poking attendants to get their attention. Oh, that would be way up on the list, I would think. Have you ever? I would never even think of poking a flight attendant.
Yeah, and if you were, where would you poke them? It'd be the question, you know, you go to the arm or the waist or...
Going to the lavatory when the seatbelt sign is on. Overreacting when a meal choice is unavailable. Of course, you don't have to worry about that much anymore because unless you're in first class, I guess you wouldn't be getting a meal anyway, so that wouldn't be an issue. Acting entitled. So apparently the flight attendants have noticed this also. And here it is, right here at number 16, Tom. Going 16. Barefoot, especially when visiting the lavatory.
No, my gosh, I can't even believe that was on. It was on the list.
It was on the list. Asking to borrow the flight attendant's pin, snapping your fingers to get attention. Oh, that would be really high. I'm sure that would go over well. Using the galley area to stretch. Blaming the attendants for mishaps beyond their control. And finally, last on their list, expecting attendants to be as informed as the captain. Some of the things that flight attendants don't like about their customers. Hey, listen, Tom, one other quick little thing here before this segment is over. TripAdvisor has announced that they have made a change about how they're going to sell tickets to some animal attractions. In fact, they're not going to offer tickets anymore to attractions where animals come into physical contact with captive wild animals or endangered species, including but not limited to elephant rides, petting tigers, and swimming with dolphins. TripAdvisor, apparently, according to their CEO, is still going to allow people to rate these places that they're not going to sell tickets for because they feel like that they're kind of a social conscience for those folks. But TripAdvisor is stepping forward and saying, hey, you know, if you mistreat animals, then we're not going to bring you business. So good for them. I congratulate them on a little bit of a social conscience for an online travel agency. We don't see that very often.
All right, coming up next on the Travel Guys, we're going to do some river cruising with Clayton Whitehead. Going to make you a much, much smarter traveler next here on the Travel Guys.
You can travel by road, you can fly by plane, you can take a ride on this one and only train. We can travel, you and me, over land and sea. We'll get to see the sunrise. You can travel.
It's the Travel and Entertainment Guys, Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And we have rounded up a most recent European river cruiser to join us here on the program. And if you listen on any regularity, you'll know who it is. So we bring on Clayton Whitehead. Clayton, you back in town?
I am for about 15 minutes. But it's great to be back from Europe. It was great to be in Europe. It was a fabulous trip cruising along the beautiful Blue Danube, which isn't blue, by the way.
Really?
What color is it?
It's kind of greenish.
Oh, okay. So you flew over, you started in Prague, you had a little bit of a stay in Prague beforehand, and you had kind of an open itinerary. So tell us a little bit about Prague, and if somebody was going there and had some time, what would they do?
in Prague, you've got the real deal. Fabulous castle on the hill, cathedral as a part of that complex, other very noteworthy churches, and something that we were able to enjoy because we had this longer itinerary was a lengthy walk through the Jewish quarter. Of course, the folks there didn't fare very well during World War II, but thankfully their four historic synagogues and their burying ground remains. Their burying ground was just absolutely a hallowed site, over 17,000 graves. Wow. Over literally the centuries that Jews inhabited the city. The entire quarter is a beautiful part of the city, and a very trendy part of the city today, but one that's so rich in history. But Prague and any European city of size is not for the meek of body. So much walking over there. The day that we toured the castle and the Jewish quarter, I logged 6.5 miles on my little fitness counter. So now that wasn't running a marathon. It wasn't all day. I mean, it wasn't, you know, a fast-paced walk, but it was a long all-day walk. But that's what's really necessary in so many European cities because, you know, these are ancient cities. They're hundreds, if not thousands, of years old, and they definitely were not built with motor coaches in mind. So the coaches, by and large, have to park on the fringe of the downtown or the historic district, whatever you want to call it. And then you have to walk in to enjoy the beauty that these cities have to behold.
But even if you were in a car, you would have that same problem because in many of those inner cities, there's very little in the way of parking. So
you're certain extent. In fact, most of Old Town Prague is closed to vehicular traffic of all kinds. So, you know, basically you've got to just put on the comfortable walking shoes and be prepared for anything weather-wise, because to see it, you've got to walk it.
Clayton, I have to ask you, you were on a river cruise, and I'm guessing from what you're saying, you spent a lot more time off of the boat and out touring than you do on the boat.
That's definitely the case. The boat tended to sail in the evenings during the dinner hour, so while you were dining, you could enjoy the scenery, and then they usually cruised into the evening. They also weren't going a great distance every night, so usually by midnight or so, we were stopped for the night, so everything really got extremely quiet. Wonderful beds and great sleeping on board, that's for sure. But certainly the focus of river cruising is stopping at these towns that are along the rivers. And in addition to Prague, which I should say is not on the Danube, it was about a two-hour drive from Prague to Passau, Germany, which was the jumping on point. But Prague being the major airport, that's where most Americans would go to begin. But along the river, we visited Vienna, Budapest, and then Bratislava, which is the capital of the Slovak Republic. I have to confess, I didn't know a lot about that city, but it was absolutely fascinating. We also visited some wineries and some smaller cities along the way, such as Melk, Austria, which is home of the famous Benedictine Abbey.
You've done river cruising in the United States, steamboating, and now you've done river cruising in Europe. For people who have done the U.S. version and not the European version, what would you tell them? How is it different, better, or worse?
Well, in terms of the logistic of the ship, which they do call them ships, by the way, it's really quite similar to American river cruising. You're on a smaller vessel, and in fact, that's something I need to say, and that is we don't have a corner on the weird weather market in North America. Weather is equally weird in Europe, and fluctuating river levels obviously have a huge impact on river cruising. In my own research leading up to picking this vessel and this particular cruise, I just came to figure that the more nimble the boat, the better. If you aren't as big, if you aren't as wide, if you aren't as long, and if you don't have as big of a draft, then you're going to be more drought proof and you're going to be more high water proof. The line that we chose to go with is one that's perhaps not largely known to Americans. It's called Amadeus, family owned company out of Austria. They have a small fleet of smaller vessels. We had 60 cabins on our boat, so full up there only would have been 120 people because we had a number of folks that were single occupancy. We were actually only 96 with a staff of 40 to serve us, and I liked it. We could turn around in the river with particularly picturesque cities like Budapest. We were able to go back and forth during the day and then do it again, round trip at night, and see the beautiful buildings illuminated. As it turned out, on our particular cruise, water levels were not an issue. But if they had been an issue, some of the big boys I saw, like Viking, and they're good folks. I love Viking Cruise Lines. They've sponsored Downton Abbey all those years, and they really have established river cruising in the minds of Americans. But their vessels are so big, so big. So if river levels become a problem, those boats are going to become a problem. So my advice to people is just to really vet the size of the boats as they're thinking about which cruise and which cruise line and which particular vessel to choose, and go with those smaller, more nimble boats. Also, you get to know everybody on board, staff and your fellow travelers. It's a much more intimate experience. Quick on and off. You know, we're not talking about 1,000 or 7,000 people like on the big ocean-going cruise ships. It was extremely personal. Everything was personal. Everybody had an outside cabin. There were no inside cabins at all. The food was just unbelievably awesome. And you know, multiple entree choices at each meal, multiple salad choices, multiple soup choices. Fresh vegetables throughout, which is something I know that Californians really look for when they're traveling in Europe. It was a real emphasis on the produce and, shall we say, the bounty of the region. Mm-hmm. We drank local wines throughout the trip. I really can't complain about anything except just, you know, the flight over and the flight back. International air travel is just a cruel reality. If you've got the stamina to get there and get back, I don't see how anybody couldn't love a riverboat experience, and the Danube is certainly one of the most scenic rivers in Europe, especially this section between Passau, Germany, and Budapest.
Clayton, we got about 30 seconds. Your favorite stop along the way?
Oh, my favorite stop. I have to say Bratislava. One, because I expected nothing. It's not a city I'd ever visited or even researched before, but it's a sweet, sweet city. It is the capital of the Republic, though small. Public art is a big part of their tradition, but it was all very meaningful. Every single artwork was by a local artist portraying a local story, and we had a wonderful guide that really made it all come to life. So Bratislava, that's my next frontier.
Our guest here on The Travel Guys, Clayton Whitehead with Sports Leisure Vacations, talking about just such a dismal time.
Yeah, you can tell he really, it was a tough job Clayton has, you know, going on these cruises and having to go all these wonderful places and stuff like that. I'll tell you, where do you get a job like that?
Honestly. It's tough work, but somebody's got to do it.
There you
exactly.
go.
Thank you, Clayton, for a recap of your cruise in Europe. Hope I caught some hints in there, Tom. Did you catch some things to make people smarter travelers about the size of the ship?
Did I ever?
Yeah. This is a big, the European river cruises are a very popular new way to travel, but the river levels and stuff have caused some consternation for people when they've gotten there. So some good wisdom from Mr. Whitehead. Thank you, Clayton. We'll talk to you again soon. Thomas, that brings us to the end of another hour of Travel Guys Hoopla here.
Sure does, Mark. And remember now, you can follow along with the Travel Guys and link to all the things that we've been talking about on travelguysradio.com. Thanks for joining us. You have a great week. Stay safe. We'll see you next time, 3 o'clock, right here on KFBK on The Travel Guys.